What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. I apologize about my voice. I know it sounds weird. I was recording some music earlier this week, and I'm not recovered from it, so I'm sorry if I sound goofy or different. On this episode, I got a chance to sit down and chat with my homie, Danny Tinningero. It's a great episode. He's an incredible lifter, great coach, great friend, very smart guy. And we get into a bunch of different shit. We talk about him coming back from his big knee injury, squatting 1,000 pounds for the first time after that. We talk about the relationship between coach and client. We talk about bandy shirts. We talk about like coaching culture and what it's like to have other coaches that you're friends with. Really great episode. He's a great friend of mine, and I love having a chance to chat with him for an hour. Selfishly, I like it because I enjoy learning from him, but also it's some really good content for all you guys. So don't want to give anything else away. Want to remind you guys that the Patreon page is up and running. It's an awesome way to support the show. And, you know, if you could share, like, rate, subscribe, all that stuff. And if you don't want to do any of that, that's cool. I appreciate you listening. And this shit will always be free because I enjoy doing it. So, like I said, don't want to give anything else away about this episode. This is episode 132. Damn, we've been doing this for a minute. Of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. Enjoy it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. I apologize in advance. My voice is fucked up. I have been recording some music this week, and my throat is fucking thrashed. So I'm sorry for that up front. Welcome to the show. I'm stoked to have Danny Tinningero, Danny T, however you want to say his name. He just told me he doesn't know how to say it, so I have a pass for saying it incorrectly. Had him on the show, I think it was like a little over a year ago, maybe even longer than that. Good friend of mine, great fucking lifter. And I'm stoked to have him on and rap about a bunch of different shit. Danny, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well, man. I appreciate you having me back on.
Yeah, dude. I think that you're one of the – I referenced you on a podcast I had, I think it was a couple weeks ago. One of the guys who is like, I was going on a rant about how, like, if you're a fucking asshole, but you're good at lifting weights, I really don't care about the weights that you lift. Mm-hmm. And you're one of the guys who lifts really cool weights and also is a very good human being. So I like use you as like, I use you as like an example of a person who like knows how to be a fucking professional, knows how to turn it on, and isn't a fucking dickhead. So just wanted to start the podcast off pumping your tires a little bit.
Just a quick note on that. Like, I don't believe in that, you know, people got to get super in the zone and super amped up and like, just, you don't have to be a different fucking person. What it comes down to is focus. And this is something that I'm finding a lot here recently. Like, motherfuckers today don't know how to focus. And then they just want to use some kind of excuse. I got this condition or whatever. Someone walked across the room. It's like, just put the fucking work in, work on your mental game, and then you don't have to be a fucking asshole to everyone in the room. Right? And take care of your business.
Sorry. Yeah, that is interesting to, you know, the whole like knowing how to focus, knowing how to turn it on and when and how to do that. And working on the mental aspect, because kind of something I wanted to get into with you is like, you know, like some of your injury history and stuff like that, and how like once you're in like a fight with something like that, be it an injury or external stuff or whatever, like it's too late to work on your mental game. That shit has to be lined up beforehand. Like if you get to a meet and it's hectic and you can't focus, it's not time to say like, oh fuck, I got to work on my mental game. Like, it's like, you should be like, it's like, bro, like you're already there. Yeah. Like it's now it's fucked. Is that something like, you're kind of like a stoic, like very, stern kind of quiet, serious guy. And then, you know, when you watch like your lifts, like your big lifts at meets and stuff, you do let out like a little bit of a scream and then kind of go, like, have you always been that way? Or did you go through the phase? Like, I know I went through the phase of like, it's psycho time every single time. Like, whether it's a training lift, whether it's a fucking tricep push down, like I was just like on full tilt. Did you go through phases like that? Have you always been like, just kind of like more relaxed until it was right before it was time to go?
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't fully call it relaxed. It's more just like introverted aggression, but hyper-focus for sure. I've never been really good at like just letting go of everything mentally, because the way my brain works is like a fucking 1980s IBM. And I have to kind of run through my checklist of like all the things that I want to be wherever I put them, or the tensions that I don't want to hold, or my brace, or whatever it might be. So it is very calculated, and like it looks like an old computer starting up. I did try to get less cognizant of certain things to try and not overanalyze and help speed up the lift. And little things over time here and there have definitely made some progress with that. But honestly, on average, I do best moving slowly. And maybe that's just the way my brain works. Maybe it's because I'm basically ancient in the sport now. I don't know. But for me and my performance, and I find that most people that are struggling with controlling some variable or making some form of technique change almost always are going to benefit from being a little bit slower. Now, on the...
Yeah, I think that that's accurate. There is like a line with that, right, though? Like there's like a tipping point where it's like, hey, motherfucker, like get going.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be doing tempo descents in your comp list on the platform.
Sure, yeah.
With regard to, you know, the injury topic and stuff like that, it definitely did help coming back from that. Obviously is tough. Thankfully I'm partial Android, so I don't have a lot of fear or emotion. But of course I know that it could always happen again, right? So part of that, like getting amped right before a heavy lift or like smashing my head into a bar, is just like a momentary fucking concussion so that I can't recall all the bad shit I've been through. So it is a little bit of a, you know, a mental technique there. But I still have to execute the lift in a very mechanical and methodical way. Otherwise shit goes sideways.
Yeah, I was actually, I've wondered before, I've never asked you this. It might be a dickhead question, but I guess here we are. so like, I wonder sometimes because you are like such an analytical guy, and you obviously have spent a lot of time like learning the ins and outs of like how the body works, how mechanics work, how to lift in gear, how to lift raw, like all this stuff. And you're an excellent coach. Do you ever think that, you know, I've looked at your stuff before and seen like, man, like, would it be better sometimes to just like throw that shit out the window and just like lift, like kind of a paralysis by analysis? Like, have you ever gone that way with it? Because it does seem like when I watch your training videos and I watch your posts and talk to you, it does seem like there's so much going on that you almost like, you like have to be a fucking android, because most people can only focus on like maybe three things at once. And it seems like, you're like the meme of like the lady with the mathematical equations that are like it's like when you're, you know, like taking out a bar to bench it, I can see you like putting like the pieces together and the stars are aligning. Do you think that ever like hinders you a little bit? Cause I go in and out of that too. Cause I definitely tried to like mimic you at times in my career. I've been like, all right, man, like slow it the fuck down. Like, take the time to make sure you're set. Da, da, da. And then I've gone the other way too, where I've just been like, fuck it. Like if I explode, I explode. But have you found that like sometimes you get like too caught up in the weeds with that stuff?
For me personally, because I'm, you know, I'm rolling on like year 22 here. So it's just that I'm so acclimated to it. It's second nature. Like it's very easy for my brain almost in the background to like prioritize and to consolidate certain things. Even though I may actively be thinking about them, they don't take actual effort to sort through them and process and stuff like that. Now for other lifters, like when I'm coaching, especially a newer lifter, I'm only going to give them one to two things to focus on because yeah, it's super easy to get overwhelmed and you don't know entirely what else they're thinking about because sometimes they don't always share those things. So it's like, I'm only going to give you one or two things. I'm focusing on like 12 or 13 things, but that's, you know, that's just part of my little checks and balances to make sure that, you know, all my pieces are where they should be. I have tried certain training methods. So like I made a reference feeling like I was deadlifting in someone else's body a couple months back. And one of my fixes for that was to shut the shit down, mentally zone out. I would close my eyes for like the first handful of warmups and I would feel. And one of my, I'm sure my guys are getting tired of it. One of my more recent cues is think less, feel more, because the body won't lie to you. And if you pay the fuck attention to what it's telling you, it's pretty easy to sort through the mechanics of lifting a barbell, being your foot pressures, you know, where tensions are going, where we want to keep them, where we don't want them, stuff like that. So if you can hone in on your proprioception and just pay attention to what you're feeling under the bar, that's going to be better than most external cueing I've found, especially when you get overwhelmed trying to think about too many things. Just think about what you're feeling and think about how it should feel.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about where it's like, I like that cue, like, you know, feel more like, that does make sense. I've had PTs in the past almost tell me the opposite of that, like that I'm too hyper aware where like, I'll feel a little like whatever funkiness in my left hip, cause that one gives me some problems. And then I'll be like thinking about that too much. And
right.
When in actuality, it's like, if I hadn't had, you know, like we've talked about it before where I'm like, man, I feel like I'm shifting since I hurt my leg, like da, 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 da. And you're like, I bet you were shifting before you fucking hurt your leg. And then I go and I look at old videos and it's like, well, yeah, my left leg has actually always been a little bit smaller than my right leg. And I have shifted. It's just an interesting thought like there. It's, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg type thing where it's like, where is that line on focusing on those things too much and also being able to feel them? But I guess that just comes with time.
Well,
like being in the sport and living for so long.
Definitely in part there. But I guess the caveat would be where you're focusing on feeling the good things, the things that I need to happen to execute the lift correctly. So that's the fine print in there is I'm not just focusing on everything I'm feeling. I'm focusing on feeling the things that I know are supposed to happen. Like, am I too far forward or backward on the foot? Or am I too far bent forward? Or, you know, things like that. Less so, am I feeling like something is pissed off or irritated or whatever?
So. Sure, yeah. Do you have like a, I kind of have like a small checklist that I go through. And like you said, like you kind of like say you're like bang your head or scream or whatever to like forget about the things or mm-hmm. or kind of disassociate the things. I kind of like intentionally think about the things because it on like the other end of things, like in my mind, it's more like if I accept that this has happened or can happen, then it's already happened and I can kind of just lift the weights. Mm-hmm. So I kind of go the opposite direction of it. It's really interesting to hear someone say that, you know, like trying to get rid of it. Cause you have had some pretty fucking big injuries, the one in particular. And so, you know, I can't really speak to that cause I haven't had that yet. Hopefully I don't, but who fucking knows? You know, like it's interesting to think about what you have to do to get past that. So, actually, like while we're on the subject, if people who are listening don't know your story of like the big kaboom with your knee, can you kind of give like a brief rundown of what happened with that?
Yeah, I'll give the concise version. Was 15 years of just old school, you know, multiply lifter cueing and not really knowing anything about biomechanics at all. So everything was, you know, sit way, way back, head and chest up as high as you could possibly get it, squat the weight off the floor for deadlifts, like just a lot of really hip fatiguing movements that
if incorporated in like a well-balanced program would probably be perfectly fine. But let's be honest, Multiply doesn't do anything well-balanced. All we do is
absolutely not.
Everything as absolutely wide as we can, shorten the range of motion as much as possible. And that led to a lot of hip dysfunction over the years. So fast forward 15 years, I realized that I actually have a pretty serious issue, chronic quad tightness, really, really bad tendinosis. I start getting into my biomechanics stuff and trying to sort through, you know, piece by piece, what's going on, what can I do to alleviate some of the pain, and then eventually source the issue to correct it. And I think I just kind of caught it a little bit too late, because the knees, pain-wise, were definitely getting better. Functionally, I was good. Range of motion-wise, I have better mobility than probably 90% of powerlifters out there. But I was preparing for the Perfect Storm's first meet in Palm Coast in 2018 while I was simultaneously training for a strongman show 2 weeks later. And 2 weeks out from the meet, I was supposed to be taking an opener. I actually did attempt the opener. I go down with it on the way back up, just a real loud snap. Felt like the carpet got yanked out from under me. I go flying one way, the bar falls, the guys, you know, try to catch it, but patellar ligament rupture on the left knee, and that was fucking wretched, man. Very, very long recovery. I had a terrible, I'm assuming he was a decent surgeon because it's held up so far, but he made me wait almost 10 weeks post-op, which is fucking garbage. So anyone out there listening, you have a knee injury, you do the surgery, you get into movement and rehab like week fucking one. Do not wait 10 weeks. I don't care what your fucking doctor says. Find someone to help guide you, of course, but the sooner you can get moving and get that range of motion back, the less limited you're going to be on the long run. Because I still can't bend my knee fully. It's like 20 to 30 degrees less than my right knee. And, you know, obviously that doesn't feel good on the bottom of a squat or in normal everyday life when I'm trying to do things well balanced. But yeah, it just took fucking probably around 2 years before I could really get a decent squat back. And then around three and a half years basically to get back to where I feel I'm pretty comparable to where I was before.
Yeah, and it was a long, long road. I remember seeing you not shortly after, you were already up walking around, but relatively short after at the first WPO in Florida, and you were hammered making my parents laugh all day. yeah, I remember that. And then obviously you came back to whatever it was, Super Finals, when it was on ESPN, and you competed there. And I forget what you squatted there. I would assume somewhere in the eights or maybe nine.
Just over nine, I think.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's all like, it's not like, like for me, when I think of you as a lifter, I think of you as like a complete lifter, like a full, like there's not one lift that necessarily stands out to me. Like you're not an enormous squatter, an enormous bencher, enormous. They're all very good, which makes for some pretty fucking sick totals. But you're like, I wouldn't call you like one of those guys that's like known for, like I'm known for having a big squat and a trash bench. People know that. That's like, you know, whatever. It is what it is, right? Right. So it's not like you're known for having this enormous squat, but it was kind of like, you know, in my mind, like, when's this guy going to put together the four digit squat again? I don't know how many you had before then, but I know you had a couple in the mid thousands or whatever. And we were like, you know, people were curious when that was going to fucking happen. I was stoked that I was there the day that it happened. I had a very bad day that day, but you had a fucking awesome day. So I'd love to kind of hear, what it was like leading up to that. And then more specifically, I'd love to get into kind of the nitty gritty of emotionally and physically what that was like to put yourself there again.
Well, referencing, you know, beforehand, I hit my first 1,000 in, I believe it was 2015, Westside Invitational that Donnie Thompson hosted. So I had hit, yeah, several 1,000-pound squats leading into last year's WPO. Since the injury, I had only attempted it one time, and that was at our Perfect Storm meet back in May. So preparing for that meet in May, I felt really good. I felt really strong. For the most part, I had all of my imbalances pretty well managed. Not completely gone, but had a good grasp on them. So I looked really good for leading up to hitting that 1,000-pound there. And on meet day, I just, for one reason or another, slightly lost my balance and couldn't come up with it. I tried it on the third attempt, so I didn't get another crack at it. Rolling into WPO, obviously having more confidence, more training time, and relatively speaking, feeling just as healthy, I wanted to make sure that I didn't fuck that up again and only have one attempt at it. So I decided to open around 950 and then make the jump to 1,003 on the second. And of course, I fucked it up again.
honestly, what happened? Yeah, what happened?
I couldn't tell you the specifics, whether I was just a little too low, a little too far into the heel, a little too far forward. Something just wasn't quite right, and I couldn't come up with it, and I didn't know how to fix it. But all I fucking knew is that I was going to. And this has happened a lot in my lifts, and I think this is something that a lot of younger lifters, or even those of us that just like to overanalyze every little detail, need to accept in order to productively move forward. You don't always need to know what went wrong. You just need to know how to do the thing right. So whenever you go back up there, you don't necessarily need to do anything different in your head. As long as you know how to do it correctly, you just fucking do it. And that's all I did. I went back up, took it for a third, stood up with it, and honestly, it wasn't an incredibly difficult lift. So sometimes, you know, shit happens and you just got to do it better next time.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously it was a super bittersweet moment for me, having missed it the previous meet. And even though, you know, I talk about like trying to block it out and go elsewhere and not think about things, you're always thinking about it. I always, in my squat descent being so goddamn slow, it's always in the back of my head. But, you know, getting to the top of that squat was just, it was a fucking awesome moment. You know, I worked 3.5 years to fucking get back there, and, you know, had my crew behind me, who helped me all along the way. Like, these people watched me go from scooting around in a fucking wheelchair to not even being able to activate my quad whatsoever to finally getting back to where I was. And it was a really good day, man. It was fucking
awesome. Yeah, that's, it speaks volumes for you too, like how excited everyone around got. You know what I mean? Like, it speaks volumes, like how much character you have and what type of guy you are, with like people getting genuinely excited about it. Because people come back from injuries all the time and there's not 50 million posts about how fucking radical it was to see. And with yours, that's, you know what I mean? That like basically was my Instagram feed for like 2 weeks, was people saying how awesome it was to see you come back from that. And, it's fucking sick. It's very easy for people to say, if I got hurt, I would whatever. If I this happened, I would whatever. And it's like, you don't really know until your back is against the wall and something happens. And like I said on the last podcast we did together, it's like, if there was somebody who was going to come back from it, it's fucking Danny. Like, he's going to figure it out. He's a maniac. Like, it's, you know, he'll be back at some point, you know? But like you said, you think about it kind of in the back of your mind when you're descending in a squat. Like, I found that I have pretty weird thoughts mid lift. So I was gonna, before we got on here, I was like, I want to ask him if he thinks about it when he's squatting. Like, I had a really bizarre moment at the 2020 Super Finals where I had missed my first two benches. And my third bench, I was bringing the bar down and everybody's like, you're lifting your head, you're doing this, move your feet. Everybody had like the fucking 1,000 different things I had to do different. Mm-hmm. And I'm bringing it down. And you know how it was like in that, like in 2XL. So that gym, like it used to be like a Marshall's or something. There's like a big warehouse thing. And I'm bringing the bar down, and I'm like, all right, you got to keep your head down. And I look up and I just see the rafters. And I remember thinking, like, as the bar's coming down, like, man, there's probably a shit ton of dust up on the rafters. talk about like not being focused. I was just like, man, that's a fucking weird thing to be thinking right now. And then I get the press command and I pressed it and it was awesome. But I've had a couple of weird ones like that. Do you find yourself like mid lift having the like, oh shit feeling, or do you like have to look back on it and be like, oh, I was nervous there?
No, it's pretty active, like in the front of my head. But I do want to comment, even though you had that thought, you executed correctly, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you got for the once, fucking lift and shit went well. So that's what's critical, is like, you don't have to always actively be trying to do the things for them to work. And I think that's what some people like spaz out about. And it's just like anything we do externally, it can be overdone. Mentally, we can overdo it as well. And it's like, you got to find that balance to do it well, but not so much that it jams you up, whether that's physically or mentally. But no, mine are pretty active. Like, I'm on the way down and I'm like tempted to like side eye my left knee. Like you good? You good? We good? Like, you got everything you need? All right. You let me know if you need anything. We'll take care of it.
That's funny. That just made me think of a fucking, another weird one. we were at Nationals in 2000. Actually, you were there.
It was Michigan. Yeah.
When me, yeah. And first 1100 pound squat. Oh, I had done it in another meet, but I had bombed on bench. But so I'm taking it. And I knew that like, Michael Fahey was like to my left, and Val was over there as well, videoing. And I'm on my way down with the squat, and we had to adjust. Like, I started to take it out of the rack. The rack was too high. We had to bring it down. So I was like stressed out, you know, and I'm going down, and I remember like out of the corner, this one made me just think, out of the corner of my eye, I saw Val in like my peripheral. And the thing that went through my head was like, I wonder where we're going to eat after the meet. Like, I was like, and it's like two pretty like intense moments of my powerlifting career. And I just remember being like, huh, where the fuck are we going to eat after this? Right. Like, oh yeah, I got to squat this. But it's true. Like when you're locked in, sometimes you go almost like black out to it. You know what I mean? And it's like, it kind of just happens. I guess I'm maybe blessed that could happen. It sounds like you're just active in your brain the whole time.
It's not every lift, but yeah, like when it does happen, it's pretty fucking glaring. And I don't know. I don't really know. It's not always like a max effort lift, but I don't think there's any consistency between when it happens and when it doesn't. That I've sure. noticed so far.
Sure. Yeah. It's like that stuff, the stuff between our ears is like kind of hard to like nail down as to like why and how and when, because it really could be anything. Like you said earlier, like you try to get your client to think of maybe two things to focus on while you're thinking of, you know, over 10. Well, they're probably thinking of over 10, just fucking eight of them have nothing to do with lifting.
I find this is quite common.
You know what I mean? Like they have the capacity to think about 10 things at once, but they're not thinking about the 10 that you need them to. You got to figure out how to shift that.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you know, clients and stuff, I'd love to hear some of your coaching, stuff. I've seen you do a couple rants lately, or one rant in particular. Do your fucking, what was it about? It was like testing, like do your tests and do all of your like,
assessments.
Your assessments. Yeah, I couldn't think of the word. And just like going bananas. And it's like, to me, I see that shit because like, I know you pretty well, and I know that you can be like a really intense guy. So I love when like that comes out on the internet, because it doesn't happen often. You're usually like pretty mellow and you know, like pretty, you know, plain face. But when you're in your car driving, me like, do your fucking assessments today, not yesterday.
You know, because yeah, so my personality by nature is a little bit I guess passive, more calm and collected, because I know that people sometimes feel like I come off aggressively or I'm intimidating. So I try to be more gentle with how I present things. But sometimes, man, you got to drive the fucking point home. Like, I obviously wasn't clear. I'm going to fucking clarify right now. I'm going to make sure everyone understands that we're all on the same page. Like, handle your shit or else don't fucking come to me complaining about a goddamn thing. Yeah.
We good? Good. So like when it comes to coaching and shit, do you find that like, cause obviously you have like a pretty, like I, the more that I, you know, the longer I do this, it seems like, coaching almost becomes like cult of personality where someone, you know, someone's going to work with you. Someone might work with Jaffe or me or Laura or whatever. And like in our group, like our peer group, I don't think anybody is like a bad coach. I don't think anyone is head and shoulders above another one. You know, we're all pretty comparable. It does seem that, you know, there's different styles and whatnot, but it seems almost like personality based where people will go to. Do you think that like when you look around at your lifters that you coach, are a lot of them very similar? Do you deal with them in a similar way? And do you find that like, have you found that like, you know, I found that like certain people, it's like, man, I really like you, but I cannot fucking coach you. Like, and I'm sorry, we do not, you know what I mean? Like, bro, I love you. You're sick. You're the best. You're driving me fucking crazy. You know what I mean? Like, have you found that like personality types, there's certain ones that are drawn to your style of coaching, your personality or whatever?
I definitely think that holds some merit for sure. I end up with a lot of the black sheep because, you know, introvert life and black sheep myself. And I do feel like a lot of us mimic one another in general areas where we're just more quiet, collected, definitely very calculated, and not overly exuberant. So I really like the bunch that I have. You know, everyone's pretty level-headed. No one goes off the rails or really, you know, it's fucking awesome. I do feel like a lot of times the athlete is going to kind of mold themselves to match your coaching style as long as everything is pretty cohesive. And not that I want anyone to be exactly like me, because there are definitely a lot of things about the way that I lift that I wish I could change, but I can't.
Same.
Like how excruciatingly fucking slow I am with everything. I would never wish that upon anyone. However, if it's a matter of, like I said, changing technique or trying to work on your stability or something, then yes, we got to slow you down. So thankfully, everyone that I've come across for the most part has been a pretty good match. I don't really have a whole lot of head-ons with anyone. And even if it does happen, you know, maybe once or twice, it's usually a pretty smooth resolution and just coming to an understanding. It's almost always a communication thing.
Sure. Yeah.
I speak robot and someone else actually speaks human, and we got to kind of interpret and translate and different things like that. But I do think for sure, people are drawn to certain coaches for the personality type and just the culture as a whole. I would agree.
Yeah. I think that's like, and you can see it for people who are full of shit because their business or their coaching stuff like doesn't really last.
Yeah.
Where it's like, imagine if you were actually a really extroverted lunatic, like you wouldn't be able to, like, you know what I'm saying? That shit would come out pretty quick. You wouldn't be able to, you know what I mean? Like if all of a sudden I was like a quiet, soft-spoken dude, people would be like, you're full of shit, buddy. You know what I mean? Like, so it seems like the genuineness of that I think is really interesting. And it's cool. Like I said, the older I get and the longer I do this stuff, and I don't really look at, I think when we all get into the game, you kind of look at like other coaches as like, I don't want to say like competition, but like definitely like, yeah, I guess it would be competition. You know what I mean? That you're like looking around and like sizing yourself up. And now I feel like our sort of like generation or our era of powerlifters, like I look to other coaches, like for me, like I want to learn from you. I want to learn from Seth. I want to learn from just Trevor, like all that shit. You know what I mean? I think that that's something that's like pretty new in our generation, as far as like past generations might not have been as down for that, where it's like someone who's making money inside of your field is willing to help you as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. I think it's, and we touch on this, you know, occasionally, social media has definitely changed a lot, particularly in our sport, but also passing along knowledge. And I feel like the more readily good information is available, the more people see, like, no one person can know everything. It's frustrating because I would love to know everything, but I couldn't possibly. So you have to have like a wealth of resources to be able to call upon something that may be just a little bit out of your grasp, whether that's lifting a weight or rehabbing something or whatever it might be, right? So I've never been opposed to like reaching out and talking to other people, because I think even if, and I have this with a lot of clients, this is one of my favorite things about coaching, is someone has a problem, I talk to them about fixing the problem, even though I don't know how to fix the problem yet, talking to them can help you basically subconsciously work through the issue, and then you end up finding an answer that you didn't have before you talked to them. So a lot of that is just, you don't even have to be getting answers from someone. They may just be making you brainstorm enough to figure out a solution to the problem.
So that's really, really interesting.
That aspect with the athletes, but then it's even easier with coaches who may have, they may just straight up have the answer, or they just have the questions that you need to figure it out.
Yeah, there's like, you get into those conversations. We've had conversations before where it's like, by the end of it, I feel like I have a greater understanding of something. And there's definitely those moments with clients too, where like, you don't really know exactly what's going on. You're like, all right, I know something here. Like, what is it? And you start talking. It's like, as the words are coming out of your mouth, you're putting together the pieces.
For sure.
And that's like a really, I definitely like have had like stints of like imposter syndrome. You know what I'm saying? Where you're like, am I good at what I do? I feel like I'm fucking good at what I do. And then you have moments like that. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, am I full of shit? Like, I don't know. And then you have moments like that where it's like, no, I'm good at this, you know? Yeah. And like, I don't mind being transparent like that. Some people might think that's not a good business move to share that shit, but there's moments where you're like, man, am I sure that I'm good at this? You know what I mean? And then you have a moment where you're like, oh, fuck yeah, I am. I definitely know what the fuck I'm talking about. And that's always like a good feeling. So kind of switching gears, I did want to ask you about something. you might hit me with a no comment. you are one of the few people in the community that has not made a stance or a comment on rubber band bench shirts.
You were going there.
Let's go, dude. Well, I just feel like it's time for people to fucking kind of say something. I'm just curious, because I do get like, I get like frustrated sometimes where it's like, I don't want to sound like an old guy screaming at the sky.
Right.
But I'm curious as to what, when I picture you in my head benching, I picture you in an overkill red bench shirt. I don't picture you in a fucking band shirt. So I'm like, I don't think I've seen him one. I'm pretty sure he hasn't put one on. I feel like I'm one of the last people to fucking not put one. I've never had one on. And I was just curious, like, where you stand with the whole thing.
So, I mean, just like when you and I started, I'm sure Cone, Goggins, you know, all of those guys were probably saying the same exact shit, where it's like,
yeah,
it's not fair, but I mean, realistically, as long as everyone has the same opportunities, then it is fair. in general, I don't think it's unfair. I think as long as it keeps its own division, where it's compared band shirt to band shirt, bench shirt to bench shirt, or if you know that competition is open, you make your choice, wear whatever you want. I have no issues with that. I have no particular interest in using one because of my specific goals. Maybe someday, but honestly, right now I don't have the desire to put a band shirt on. I have been in one time simply because another lifter came through our gym.
Shame on you.
Right?
I'll go,
shame on you. Go, you're out of the club.
I'll go shower as soon as we're done. But yeah, I was just interested because said lifter was a comparable size to me, but couldn't touch anything less than like 550. So I was curious. I threw the shirt on, touched 315. And then I think I did like 585 and that was it and called it a day. I just don't, it doesn't take the skill that a bench shirt does. So it doesn't interest me. And I know people are going to get offended. I don't give a fuck. Do whatever you want with that. But I mean, honestly, it's a raw bench and there's nothing wrong with that. And you can lift a lot of weight and overload. And I think that's fucking awesome because that's why we all got into Multiply in the first place, was to do incredibly stupid shit with ridiculous clothes on. So this is just a step up of more ridiculous clothing, you know, inching closer and closer to bondage.
How do you, they're going to put out a like a deadlift suit that comes with like a ball gag to help you get like a better brace or something.
It's well, gonna like, I mean, you know, the secret's already out about holding a tighter brace if you wear a butt plug. So I don't doubt the ball gag soon to follow.
You said before you no boundaries, so we'll just go wherever. What do you think about like totals and shit though? Doesn't that create like a weird thing? Like the total thing is, yeah, the total thing is weird for me. I've been struggling with the where I stand with these fucking things, like mm-hmm. since they became a thing.
Right.
You know, I remember like the Womack shirt, like the Bumblebee fucking thing that was however long ago. And I remember seeing that and everyone was like, nope, no thanks. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like everybody, like literally everybody that even knew about those would be like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then it slowly, you know, they slowly became like accepted or whatever. It's really difficult for me because, when you look at like, you know, like, Frankel's total,
mm-hmm.
That would be a bummer to see get broken by somebody in a bandy shirt.
Okay. Hold on. Was that you that messaged me specifically about that?
No, okay. We've never talked about this. That's why I didn't know if you're going to tell me to fuck off.
Okay. So yeah. So someone specifically asked me if I had,
I think I know, well, I know who it is, but I, we're not going to say his name, but I know who, I'm pretty sure I know who messaged you. Yeah, go ahead.
So they asked me if I would come back and break Frankel's record wearing a band shirt. I said, absolutely not. Like, I have way too much respect for him as a lifter and also, you know, my own lifting. Like, it's not the same fucking thing. So this kind of goes back to what I was talking about, keeping it in its own division. As long as it's classified under Unlimited, which is not Multiply, I don't take any issue with it. It does kind of suck with regard to the all-time world records. But again, whoever the fuck is keeping track of shit these days, if they differentiate between multi and unlimited and raw and single, like, I don't really have an issue with it.
It's a little tough with the, because like, okay. So like 5 years ago, if someone was like, what's your biggest squat? And you were like 1,000 pounds. And they were like, Oh, like what could you do raw? You could turn around and say like, I don't give a fuck what I do raw. You asked me for my biggest squat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a shit. What, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it seems like I feel like the guys who are not in bandies almost have to like qualify what they're doing.
Right.
Like it's like, I have the world record bench in poly. It's not, it can no longer be, I have the biggest bench press.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to me, that feels like, I feel like a hypocrite for not just rolling with it. Cause I was always the guy that was just like, powerlifting is about lifting the most weights, fuck everything.
Exactly.
It's a very touchy, hypocritical thing that I feel like kind of a shit cunt for.
It's not, yeah, it's a bitch comment.
it's tough, man. I don't know like how to kind of compartmentalize it and like make it okay in my brain. And I don't have, for me, like I don't have any interest in putting one on because like, bro, like I don't know, man. If I put on one of those and blasted 800, like my history in a bench shirt, everyone would be like, who gives a fuck? And I would say who gives a fuck because it wouldn't mean – I would rather bench 7 in poly than 8 in a bandy for me personally because no one's expecting me to do that and I suck in a poly shirt. So you know what I mean? So like,
I definitely think you got over 8 in a band shirt for sure.
Well, like – and so – but all I'm saying is like it wouldn't mean the same. Like – you know, it's like if you came back from that injury, put on, there was like a bandy squat suit and you put it on and you blasted 1050, like it wouldn't fucking matter. Like who cares? Cause that's not
right
what you were going after in the first place.
Yeah.
I don't, every time I talk about this on the podcast, I get a little looser with what I'm willing to say about it, but it is, I think that what people are doing in them is crazy. It's sick. Like obviously Jimmy Kolb is a fucking animal.
I mean, it doesn't matter what he wears. It's just fucking nuts, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like to me, because I've got my personal feelings, like and a friendship with Hoff. I think that benching over 1,000 after squatting 12 is a different thing. It's really difficult, man. And so I like asking guys who have been in the sport for a long time. You've been in the sport twice as long as me, so you've seen some of the evolutions. You know, into the SDPs from the regular phenoms and all that shit. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting to like, when I'm looking around and I'm seeing people have 250 pound bench PRs, I'm like, okay, well, that's obviously not the same thing.
And I'm right there with, I definitely feel like old man, like get these fucking band shirts off my lawn. And it sucks. I don't want to feel that way. But honestly, like I said, it doesn't take the fucking skill. It doesn't take the time. And that's what we respect as lifters, like at a high end is like you did your time. And whether or not that's right, it doesn't fucking matter. It's just how people think. Like that's just that's how you earn your keep in this fucking brotherhood. Like you do your time, you do your suffering. It doesn't mean you have to be injured or hardcore like we used to think it was, you know, 10-15 years ago, but to just throw on a shirt and then let's just say you were the first ever person to get an official record on a band shirt, like that fucking means nothing because like you're saying, it is literally just a different lift. It's like if I were on a bicycle and I beat someone running on foot, it doesn't really matter.
Right. Yeah. It's weird, man. And the bicycle ride could be very sick in and of itself, but it's a different thing. I just don't know how I'll say this and I'll be done with my fucking back and forth inconclusive comments. but I'll say this. There's a lot of people who 5 years ago were making big shit posts on the internet about how there were too many divisions in fucking powerlifting and fucking trophies for everybody, mm-hmm. who are now asking for another division to be added so they can have their weirdo band shirts. Oh, you know what I'm saying?
For the band shirt?
Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's like a lot of like people who would say, oh, everybody gets a fucking trophy. And it's like, and now those same people are like, well, we need our own bandy division. It's like, ah, it's very weird to add another layer to an already pretty divided sport.
Yeah.
That would agree. So it is weird. I haven't put one on. I have one in my possession that someone gave to me and I've never put it on.
Oh yeah. It's just lingering around. I mean, I have it. I don't have any plans on using it, but
I don't even look at it, bro.
It's going to be one of those fail videos where you trip and fall into the band shirt. And then land underneath a barbell.
I think my wife would fucking kill me. To be completely honest with you. No, I had a buddy who was like, do you want this? Like, I don't want it. Blah, blah, blah. It doesn't fit me. I'm like, I'll take it to have it, but I'm not going to fucking put it on. Yeah. So I don't want anyone to get offended. I respect anybody who is passionate about what they're doing.
I mean, like I said, we all got into this sport to do insane shit. So I have nothing against anyone using it in competition, as long as, like I said, the separations are there. And I don't think it's a bad tool to have, because sometimes benching in a shirt fucking sucks, man. It's brutal on the body. Or you're 5 pounds heavy, you can't get into your shirt. You're 5 pounds light, your shirt fits like a fucking parka. So it is something that's like a much more easy to use tool, not just in the technique, but it's not so dependent on your specific body size at that given time. So I do think it's something that's great for people to use as an overload mechanism. Like, I've had a lot of lift. I coach lifters that use band shirts, and they're like, honestly, my shirt bench feels much more stable after using the band shirt, which would make sense, because a lot of the band shirts I've seen were from fucking sketchy, unstable looking shit. Or I could imagine going back to the shirt where it's like, oh, I got this fucking hug around my shoulders. Probably is a good feeling.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense. I hadn't thought of that. Well, now that we've narrowed down whoever's listening to this to like three people, because everyone has said fuck off.
Lost the other two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The seven listeners have dwindled down to four. So, well, hey, man, like, we're getting to the end here. I appreciate it. I'm going to stop asking the same question at the end of every podcast. I'm going to try and come up with different ones. And for you, I would love to know what your piece of advice would be for someone who is getting into the coaching realm of powerlifting or strength sports in general. Like, if you had some advice for, you know, somebody who's looking to take on a few clients or what have you.
Oh man, that could be a long one. All right, I'll try and keep it a little concise. Realize that you don't know everything. What you do know, you probably don't fully know, and what you do know, you're never done knowing. So keep researching, keep learning, learn different modalities. Certain modalities don't work well for certain people, even though they should work for everyone. They don't mentally work for certain people, so you need to have several other ways to handle different psyches. Some people like to train a certain way and they're very headstrong about it, and you just have to kind of plant a seed and allow them to formulate the decision on their own that they want to try something else. So a lot of like working with athletes is just gentle coercion in a productive manner. you have to lead them to the water, and then they have to decide to drink on their own. But never stop learning. Don't ever close off your avenues, whether that's training, rehab, recovery modalities, whatever it might be. Like, you need to keep learning, because otherwise, the second you stop learning, you're dying, and that just gets passed on to your clients. So, as far as being successful, well, I won't speak on that. You got to be Instagram famous, but. if you want to actually make change and do productive things in the sport with your athletes, you got to pass on knowledge. You got to take the time to teach. You can't just throw a fucking piece of paper at them and tell them do what's in the ink, because the important stuff is the stuff that goes into their brain and stays there. So take the time to teach, whether it's just a few extra comments or a phone call or a video chat or whatever. Teaching is what's going to be passed on, and that shit's powerful. Telling someone what to do in the moment is very superficial and it won't last. So.
Fuck yeah. That's great, man. That's very helpful. Give out your social media. Are you still taking on clients right now? Or are you closed?
I'm kind of fucking packed to the gills. Having said that, I haven't ever turned anyone away, more or less. So social media, the Daniel Tinajero. If I think I can work you in a productive manner, I absolutely will.
Fuck yeah. Well, make sure you follow Danny, whether you want to get coached by him or not, because his lifting is fucking sick. And as he spoke about, it's very slow, so you'll get a real good look at what he's doing.
You don't ever have to pause the videos, I promise you. They pause on their own. especially the deadlift.
Thanks. Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for coming on again. Guys, if you want to make sure you follow my personal page, it's AnthonyCW13. The trigger warning page is trigger_warning_conjugate for all your snapback and mental Monday and apparel needs. Make sure to follow the gym page, Anchor Athletics NH. We got a meet coming up in 2 weeks, I believe. Lots of cool shit going on with that. Got a bunch of sponsors and everything, so that's rad. That's all we got for today. Thanks again for listening to the TWC Stay Hated podcast. And as always, stay hated, motherfuckers.